Good afternoon, everyone. My name is John Valdivia, and I serve as a Legislative Review Committee Chairperson. And to my left is Councilman Nickel from the 5th Ward, and to my right is Stephen Graham. The meeting start time is at 4 o'clock, according to my clock. I want to welcome everyone to today's meeting of the Legislative Review Committee. At the very outset, I want to encourage public comment, and we certainly would like for the members of the public to express their viewpoint on this. There is a 3-minute limitation, so I want to encourage you, you don't have to use all your 3 minutes. You're welcome to use your 3 minutes, but you're not obligated to use all three. And so I want to encourage you, if you'd like to speak on this item, you'd fill out a yellow slip for the item on the agenda, and they're on the back table there. Also, I want to encourage members of the public to pick up a copy of some of the documents that we will be reviewing and discussing this afternoon. They also are available on the back table for your reading pleasure, and want to encourage you to please avail yourself of those copies. If you would like, also, there is a blue slip, and the blue slip is for items not on the agenda, and we will be also taking those comments as well. And I want to encourage you, please, if after filling that out, if you could give it to our staff member, I believe he or she will be coming soon, but just place them there on the counter, and we'll call your name up. We want to certainly encourage professionalism, courtesy, and respect, along with civility. Please keep your comments on point and restrict your comments to the topic at hand. And Mr. Nickel has agreed to be our timekeeper for 3 minutes, and I appreciate that, sir. Thank you. That will certainly provide some order for our conversation and meeting here this afternoon. Moving right ahead, I want to go ahead and, if there are no closed session items from Mr. Graham, Mr. Graham, are there any closed session items?
There are none.
Very well. Moving up into our open session calendar, the first topic is a general overview and a discussion on the medical marijuana study, evaluation, research, and regulation. This is certainly, we have invited our city manager, Mark Scott, and I do not see him present, but we have alerted him and he knows of today's meeting. Also, our city attorney, city clerk, and finance have either opined or supplied information on the staff narrative report by Mr. Graham. In our presence this afternoon, I'd like to recognize the Honorable Mayor Kerry Davis. Thank you, sir, for attending this very important topic for our community and really our quality of life here in our community. Without further delay, I'd like to recognize a member of our Legislative Review Committee, and that would be Councilman Nickel. Sir?
I just want to thank the staff for putting together a very comprehensive presentation today. I look forward to the public's comments. I think there's been some developments since our last meeting that I think warrant our attention and discussion. And certainly as we head toward November and the election, I think it's very important for us as policymakers to fully understand the scope and the impact that potential legislative or actions at the state level may have on our city and on a policy level to ensure that, again, we conduct our due diligence, keep an open mind, and do what's in the best interest of our city and our residents and our quality of life. So I have nothing further to say other than I do look forward to some conversation today. At the last meeting, I did have some concern about the costs, ensuring that whatever action we take on a policy level, whether it's prohibition, whether it's permitting and regulating, that we ensure that the costs incurred by the city are covered and that we have a clear sense of what those costs are likely to be and ensure that whatever course of action we take, we can recover the costs that the city incurs in terms of enforcement and control. And with that, I will conclude my statement. Thank you.
Thank you, Councilman Nickel. I appreciate your presence, and I want to certainly send my condolences to Mr. Barrios' family. Mr. Barrios is also a member of this committee, and for his personal and family reasons, he is not here today, and we certainly send our condolences on his, Mr. Barrios. I want to provide just an overview of what we have entertained here the last 60 days or so. Beginning April of 2016, we convened discussions and topics regarding the medical marijuana process here in our community. And we wanted to certainly understand and better comprehend the implications and legal minutiae regarding those important proceedings. In March of 2016, the council affirmed me to be Mayor Pro Tem, and because of that, I was able to provide some leadership on committee assignments, and I'm certainly grateful for the trust and confidence placed with my council peers in that stead. And shortly thereafter, I assigned those committees to undertake various quality of life issues in our community and pulse points thereof. Beginning of April of 2015, I did agendize and provide some direction to staff that we also needed to re-agendize some of the discussion regarding medical marijuana and the industry, sensing that there was a greater need to discuss it out publicly in front of the general public and our residents. In the year 2015, Councilman Charette was the Legislative Review Committee chairman, and he, for all intents and purposes, attempted to scratch the surface here of the medical marijuana issue, and nothing really was brought forward to the full council. In April of 2016, we had our first Legislative Review Committee hearing, and we also had our second one in May of 2016, and then now is our third one for this under my leadership as chairman. What we have attempted to do is move the ball quickly and expeditiously so that we can have a say from the full mayor and common council. My intentions are to bring forward this discussion onto the mayor and common council. It is quite imperative that we get the whole assembled council's perspective on this, but we needed to start somewhere. And so under the obligation and sense of duty to provide that direction and option for council members to opine in the greater public forum, it was quite important for us to begin the heavy lifting of discussing and certainly ascertaining what is most important and critical. So we are here now to today, after almost 60 days of discussing this. I'd like to encourage this deliberation that we do need to move forward quickly. Today on our calendar, we will hear from Damian Martin on the presentation of medical marijuana. Mr. Martin is here in our audience, and he'll be recognized in just a few minutes. And briefing on the medical marijuana initiative that was circulated and is suggested to be on the November ballot here in the city of San Bernardino. And Mr. Graham from the city attorney's office will review that. And then I'd like to also finally recognize Mr. Madrid and Mr. Kaziri regarding the medical marijuana initiative and proposed draft ordinance. So on your agenda for Mr. Nickel, we're going to recognize Mr. City Attorney. Why don't we go with Mr. Graham first, and then we'll go with Mr. Martin second, and then Mr. Madrid, if you wouldn't mind, and Amir, you'll go last, and we'll open it up for public discussion. So without further delay, also recognizing our city manager who just entered, thank you, sir, Mr. Scott, for being here in attendance. So without further delay, Mr. Graham, thank you.
Thank you, council member, members of the audience. My name is Stephen Graham. I'm a deputy city attorney with the city attorney's office. I know we have a full agenda, and I'm sure there'll be lots of discussion and comments, so I'll keep my briefing short. We have a proposed ordinance, the San Bernardino Regulate Marijuana Act of 2016, and I have copies of what was turned into the city clerk's office. A notice of intent to circulate a petition was filed with the office of the city clerk on April 7th. It's my understanding that last week the proponents of the initiative turned in what they state are sufficient number of signatures. That is currently being verified by the city clerk in collaboration with the registrar of voters. If there are sufficient signatures for this proposed ordinance, it will be taken to the mayor and common council at the next regularly scheduled meeting of the mayor and common council, for which an agenda has not already been posted. And at that meeting, the mayor and common council will have an opportunity to either adopt the ordinance as it is written, and pursuant to Charter Section 120, the mayor and common council don't have the ability to alter the ordinance in any way. It's either pass it, or if it does not pass, then to send it to a special election. The rules for special elections in this scenario can be a little complicated, but I'll give you the short version. We can put it on the next statewide election that's occurring in November. So that's when it would go. Briefly going over the initiative, it appears to have been professionally put together. Notwithstanding that, there are issues with it. For example, just to give everyone a brief overview of what the initiative purports to do. It identifies several APNs within the city. A map has been prepared, and it's off to the right here. And it creates two overlay districts within our development code from those APNs. The first is Marijuana Overlay District 1. And this is primarily consisting of cultivation, manufacturing, delivery uses. Marijuana Overlay 2 would be primarily dispensary, testing and other uses such as that. If you want a further summary of the ordinance, I'd refer you to the prepared ballot title and summary. Those prepared by our office. One of the reasons a map was prepared was because APNs aren't entirely accessible to members of the public, although they are very easy to locate if you have the tools. If you don't, they can be a little confusing. So we did create a map. Like I said, there were a couple issues with the ordinance. There's some typos in the ordinance that may affect the definitions that are used, may not. Some of the APNs that were used don't appear to exist. Those may have been typos or not. And another inconsistency that we found was, if referring to the ordinance itself, there are essentially two requirements for a marijuana business to exist or operate within the city. One, it has to be in one of the overlay zones, which means it has to be on one of those APNs that is listed. And two, it must be a certain distance from residential zones and other sensitive uses. A look at the city's zoning map currently in effect would seem to disqualify a great number of those that are currently designated in the marijuana overlay. I'm not sure if that was an oversight, if it's not intended to be interpreted that way, or if it was intentional. That being said, it has a pretty straightforward development standards, the kind of things we would see in our development code. It has an application process that would be administrative. It wouldn't be going to the council. It includes regulatory fees based on square footage of the use, with council having the ability to lower those fees if necessary, but not increase them. That's basically the summary of it, and if there's any particular questions, I'd be happy
to answer. Thank you, Mr. Graham. I do have a question regarding more on the regulatory fees that are proposed here in the initiative passed by these individuals. My question is, if in fact the ordinance or proposed ordinance suggests that there are regulatory fees associated with square footage, isn't that construed as a sales tax, and how legal is that? Walk me through the legality of this being imposed via ordinance, and what say you on the legality of that particular issue?
Well, the fees are found in 19.420.110 of the proposed ordinance. For example, on cultivation sites, it's $5 per square foot of canopy. Without a financial analysis of what it would cost to do the permitting, the application, and the regulatory fee, or the regulation, I couldn't speculate on whether it could potentially be considered a tax or not. I can tell you that other cities are litigating that very issue, including the city of Upland. And it may be something that we're getting some new law on in the near future from the Supreme Court, or not.
Is the avenue to study it further under who's responsible to pay for the economic impact report and the fee study? Is it more the city to opine upon this ordinance from an outside group, or is it the responsibility of those applicants who have initiated this to provide that?
The issue of whether it's a tax or a fee has only come up in the context of which election the ordinance or the initiative should be placed on. So taxes in the state of California are required to go on the same ballot as city council seats. So our city council is elected on odd years. So if this was considered a tax, it could be argued, and it has been argued by other cities, that it would need to go on the same ballot as city council. So that would mean not until potentially 2017, and if the charter initiative goes through, maybe not even 2018.
Who makes final determination or recommendation on determining whether this is a fee or a sales tax that should be calendared onto the city council election cycle?
I think that ultimately that burden is going to fall on the city to determine what, how much it costs to process a permit, how much it costs to do regulation. I don't think that a member of public would necessarily have access to that kind of information.
All right. So, Mr. City Manager, the potential there is certainly for our city to have the direction from your office as to maybe studying this a little bit more further and the impact that it might have, whether it be a sales tax or a fee. Certainly, I would look to your guidance and direction on studying that further and making recommendation. Ultimately, I guess, back to the full council, if this is the direction that it's headed, we need to ascertain whether this is a sales tax or it's a fee by further understanding the permitting of the square footage. Mr. Nickel, you have questions?
Well, my only real question is there any mechanism to escalate these fees over time, or are they just fixed, set in stone, and can never be changed?
According to the ordinance as it is written, the Mayor and Common Council have the authority to reduce, but the amounts stated in the ordinance are the maximum.
So 100 years from now, they'd be the same amounts?
Presumably.
All right. Okay. Thank you.
Here's kind of my observation of the initiative proposed by the way, what's the name of the group that is proposing this, Mr. Graham? Do you have the principals that are presenting this or have initiated this?
The proponent is a Vincent Guzman of the city of San Bernardino. My understanding is that he's affiliated with the California Cannabis Coalition, but that may or may not be accurate.
Are there any members from that organization here present in our meeting today? If so, would you raise your hand? Any members of that initiative here in our audience today? All right, very good. Seeing none. My personal feeling as I kind of took a glance on this is that this is an outside group, and I certainly appreciate the freedom to express your constitutional rights. But at the end of the day, we have a responsibility here locally under local control authority as elected officials to provide the leadership necessary. And so I think what we'll hear is that while it may qualify, there is a need for this council to provide direction and leadership to perhaps even counter this. When we have an outside group, and I certainly have never talked or spoken to those individuals, but it is here now before us, and it looks as though, do we have a definitive time when this might be calendar agendized? It's coming before the council, and when are the final signatures being tallied and verified?
So the charter requires that those signatures be tallied within 10 days. Unfortunately, they were turned in the day after the statewide primary election, and we had a lot of new registered voters because of some of the individuals on the ballot. So I know the Registrar of Voters is working as fast as they can. Assuming they get it done within the next week or two, you can expect it to be on the Mayor and Common Council agenda for July 5th.
So here's how I see it, folks. If we fail to even provide a counter initiative, then this goes directly to our voters. This is an outside group. Even though there's a figurehead here from our community, who again I've never met or spoken with, this is an outside group that is attempting to place this legislation and policy before our voters. I think that it's quite imperative that we as a mayor and common council entertain this and really do something about it in response to it. So I appreciate that, Mr. Graham. Thank you for the update. Appreciate that. Are there any further questions regarding this, Mr. Nickel? All right. Very good. Chair will recognize Mr. Martin. Sir, would you please come up? We will go ahead and start the clock on you and provide you with 15 minutes. And the floor and microphone is yours, sir.
Thank you very much, Chairman, LRC Committee, members of the public. Thank you for taking the time to come here and listen to me today. What I'm going to present today is kind of an approach and a vision for regulating medical cannabis businesses in the city of San Bernardino that I believe is ultimately consistent with the character of the city and provides maximum benefit to the city. And what I'm going to do today is kind of explain the framework, the overall concept, the benefits that the city stands to gain, and an approach from the policymakers to take in order to get this done, to give staff such as Mr. Graham, Mr. Scott, the ammunition to produce an ordinance that does everything that an initiative probably doesn't do. I'm going to go ahead and do a little bit of extended introduction before I get into the presentation. I got medical cannabis policy expert up there, so I got to be able to back that up. Just kind of from the title slide right there, I'm a licensed attorney in the state of California. I have an MBA. My professional background is I was a veteran from the United States Navy, served 6 years, served as an intelligence analyst, spent the first 2 years as at an intel center in England, and did my second 4 years attached to Navy SEALs, did deployments to Chad, Iraq, and Yemen. And so with that, with all due respect, this is not the most intimidating audience I've ever presented in front of. It's meant to be a joke. Sorry if it wasn't a good one. But after I got out of the Navy, while I was in the Navy, I got my undergraduate degree. I got my MBA. I worked on my MBA while I was in Iraq. So during the day, I do surveillance on terrorist targets, get back to my little cubby, dorm, whatever you want to call it, and do financial accounting. So After I got in the Navy, I served as a strategic consultant for financial institutions and government agencies. In particular, I used to work for the District of Columbia Courts. With that, what I'll note is this presentation that you're going to see today is no different than something I would share with them when I was essentially on the payroll. Down to the slide templates. I just changed the color from blue to green because, you know, given the subject matter of our discussion here today. And then kind of realizing how big medical cannabis was going to be for the United States, and California in particular, I relocated out to California to go to law school. I've spent the last 4 years working with some of the top firms in the medical cannabis business. Bruce Margolin, the director of LA Normal. I worked for Michael Gron. He was the attorney that did the appeal in LA for challenging LA's ordinance, which is a really great example of a bad regulatory program. And notably, it was passed by an initiative, and because it was passed by an initiative, as the world has changed in the ensuing 3 years, the city council can't go back and change it, so it's kind of locked in stone. So I think we want to avoid that here. And then kind of what I do my day-to-day now is kind of like the go-to guy for drafting local ordinances. I have a process methodology for doing it. It's worked out really well. Conversations with Assemblymember Bonta's office to hopefully get that shared with all the cities as a means for getting this done and doing this. And also I'm in the process of being considered for Adelanto's Regulatory Oversight Committee Board for this subject, this topic as well. That's the board, that body will ultimately be advising that city on how to improve and have a good regulatory regime for medical cannabis. So with that, you have a lot of materials in front of you today. Attached to the agenda are two full-length presentations. I'm not going to go through those because I can't execute them in 15 minutes, and even this is going to be a bit of a challenge, especially given I just did a four-minute introduction to myself. But the one you want to be looking at is this, an approach for implementing the state's Medical Marijuana Regulation Safety Act in the city of San Bernardino. So here's the agenda. I'm going to kind of burn through the slides. The slides are designed to stand alone, so don't worry about reading them. I'll point you the directions, stuff I want you to look at, and you take it home and read it. This is kind of just how consultants go ahead about doing it because, you know, it's a lot of information, and again, it's something that you could think about after you leave here today and read it. We're going to start with background and context. Mr. Graham did a tremendous presentation on kind of where we are legally. I just want to kind of set the stage for what I'm going to talk about. I'm not going to cover this. I'm going to kind of burn through it real quick. I just want to highlight we've had medical cannabis in the state of California since 1996. In 2003, the state attempted to create a regulatory framework for that. That's that big indented bullet in the middle of the slide. And their approach for doing it was to give medical cannabis businesses an affirmative defense, and then set these things where are called guidelines. So it's pretty much the complete opposite of a traditional regulatory licensing scheme because you do the vetting afterward, after the arrest, after the prosecution, as opposed to saying, oh, we think your business is great and can comply with these regulations. We give you a license. Go ahead and operate. If you violate the restrictions of that license, we're going to suspend your license. So in kind of reaction to that, a lot of cities, including San Bernardino included, banned medical cannabis businesses because it's really an unworkable regulatory framework. And then here's where we kind of enter the new regime, which became effective on January 1st of this year, which is the Medical Marijuana Safety and Regulation Act. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on this because, like I said, Mr. Graham's done a tremendous job at it. What I'll just say is that MRSA is a parallel regulatory framework. And it's a traditional licensing system. When I say it's parallel, it means the local governments get a say. They can regulate how they want it over and above what the state imposes, and the state will put something in as well. The kind of interesting feature about MRSA is because we've had medical cannabis in the state of California for a long time at this point, so the local regulation is really the way to transition from where we are with this affirmative defense to where we have something normalized and just regular businesses. Okay, so I'm on the next slide now. I'm just going to provide a real quick update on federal law because this is an excuse that a lot of local governments use to ban cannabis as well. Federal law is changing. This is just a reflection of that and where we're going. The Obama administration has a policy of leaving cannabis enforcement to the states. That's just a policy, no big deal. Next president changes it. Obama wakes up tomorrow on the wrong side of the bed. He changes it. Who cares about that, really? What's really exciting is this provision that two California Congress members, bipartisan, by the way, Congressman Rohrabacher and Congressman Farr, start including this provision in the fiscal spending bills at the federal government level. And what this provision does, particularly as it relates to the city of San Bernardino, is if the city of San Bernardino goes ahead and moves forward with a permit program for medical cannabis, the federal government can't intervene and stop you from doing it. Now, even more importantly for these guys, for everybody in the audience, is that a federal district court judge in the Northern District of California said, well, not only does that apply to the states, it also applies to the individual businesses and individuals that are essentially helping the state implement its regulatory framework for medical cannabis. The other part I want to just kind of quick hit on, the 2016 statewide recreational cannabis initiative. What I just want to kind of do with this is just kind of put it in context with MRSA. The initiative that's likely to pass and likely to be on the ballot in November 2016 is just a clone of MRSA, except applied to recreational cannabis, essentially. What's really significant about it, and to the extent that you guys want to figure out what to do with medical cannabis, you got time to figure out what to do with recreational cannabis, even if this thing passes in November. The reason being is because, unlike MRSA, where I described we have this transitionary mechanism with local regulation, that doesn't exist for recreational cannabis. You have to have a state license to have a recreational cannabis business. And those won't be issued to 2018. So even if this initiative passes in 2016, you got a year plus to kind of say, do I want to do this or not want to do this? And then you opt out by imposing a ban on recreational cannabis businesses. Or you say, okay, we want to do it. Our medical cannabis regime is really good, and we think we could use it for recreational cannabis as well. So that's what you can do. All right, so that kind of put us in the lay of the land. This is describing where we are. And now I'm going to get into kind of my vision for all this and kind of the framework for it. What I want to highlight to this, and the reason I'm standing before you today, is not because I am pro-cannabis. I admit I'm a patient. I have no shame in that. I'm a productive member of society, notwithstanding that, as I think I demonstrated in the introduction. But why I'm here today is because the world in 2011, when you guys banned cannabis, medical cannabis business, is completely different from the world that exists today. We have all the state law coming on board with regulations, traditional licensing system. We're getting rid of that affirmative defense thing. And, you know, like I said, that affirmative defense was pretty much unworkable. So what I'm going to be advocating today is I'm going to be talking about the production side industry of medical cannabis. Now, what that means for everybody here is I'm not going to be talking about dispensaries. I'm a patient. I think dispensaries are vital. But there are different political and fiscal problems from the production side industry. And the other thing I think is important, and this is something that Mr. Madrid had talked about previously, was creating something that's consistent with the character of the city. This is a blue-collar industrial town. I know that because I'm a blue-collar industrial guy myself. You know, I didn't include it in my introduction, but prior to, you know, joining the Navy, I was a plumber for 3 years. And, you know, when this is the kind of environment I'm used to working in. So in addition to, you know, helping with your medical cannabis policy, if you ever need a water heater installed, I can help with that as well. So here, I want to talk, this is kind of going to lead into what I mean by production side industry. So MRSA has like these 13 licenses. I don't really think about it that way for the purpose of local regulation. Essentially, we have five actors here. We have cultivators, manufacturers, distributors, testers. Essentially, all these actors are going to string together in a supply chain. And that's the next slide. I'm not going to go through this because the picture speaks 1,000 words. So I'm on slide 10. This is the world that exists. This is it. This is the high level. This is, look, if you're going to leave anything today, leave with this slide in your mind. Burn in your brain. Because what I'm going to be talking about is the left part of the slide. And the kind of interesting wrinkle about this, and what's interesting about the state law by creating these categories, is we could permit the production side industry in the city. And it's very consistent with the character of the city. And the revenue benefits from it are going to be tremendous. And the revenue is going to be derived from outside the city. Whereas dispensaries, the revenue is derived from inside the city, if you kind of get what I'm saying. Because it's people, you're going to get sales tax revenue, whereas with these production side businesses, they're going to be producing products that are sent elsewhere, they're going to make a lot of money, and then you're going to tax those businesses based on essentially sales that occur outside the city. So they have different political and fiscal ramifications. What I'm just kind of really trying to suggest here is we could figure out this production side thing, and then at some point in the future, we can come back and revisit the dispensary issue. It really makes sense in terms of you thinking about putting the cart before the horse. Like, you want to have a stable, well-regulated supply of cannabis before you have places that sell that regulated supply. So you figure out the production side, and let's say you do come back and you do want to do dispensaries. Well, guess what? When we establish dispensaries, we have businesses that we're already regulating putting the cannabis into those dispensaries. So, and like I said, the revenue stuff is really disparate between us. Chairman, I'm down to 3 minutes, but I'm going to respectfully request an additional 5 minutes for my presentation.
Sure, it's granted.
Thank you very much, Chairman. So I'm going to go through a revenue analysis now. I'm not going to get real in detail to it. I mean, this can be very in-depth. We could talk about this for 2 hours. There's a little bit of different approaches. What I do is a supply. What I'm going to present to you today is a supply-side revenue analysis. Essentially, I'm going to say, what does the city have to offer in terms of production capacity, and what would that be worth in terms of a business, and what revenue could we take from it? It's kind of a potential. Another way to do it is to look at patient consumption, but then you kind of reverse engineer to it. It's not really suitable for a 15-minute presentation. So here's where I'm going to go. And again, I'm not going to spend a ton of time on this. I'll just, like I said, I want to tell you kind of how I'm thinking about it. So what I did is I looked at the city's industrial land, and then use the city's vacant industrial land as essentially as a proxy for what the medical cannabis industry could put to use. I just picked a number. I picked 75%. You could take this analysis and leave. You know, I could have done a bunch of graphs and stuff and said, here's what it looks like at 25%, here's what it looks like at 50, whatever. I didn't do that because I want to tell you a narrative. If you want a bunch of graphs and data and scenario play, I totally provide that. But right now we're just going to pick 75%. If you think it could only be 25%, just take all the numbers in the presentation, ratchet them down by 33%. This is a linear model, so there's not a lot of tricks to it. What's important here is the wholesale cannabis prices, and then this ratio of cultivation sites, testing sites, manufacturing sites, distribution sites, and then the production by square footage of indoor cultivation. Just so you realize I'm not just making up these price numbers, this is from an index essentially for, I'm on slide 13, It's an index for legal medical cannabis prices, so that's what stuff's going for out there. It seems expensive, but it is. That's just the reality of it. Okay, so here's my just kind of hypothetical, that's why I use quote-unquote model, just my model industry. So we're talking about 650 indoor cultivation sites, 97 manufacturing sites, 13 testing sites, 32 distribution sites. We know we have 600 indoor cultivation facilities. We know that equates to approximately 14 million square foot of cultivation space because MRSA puts a cultivation cap. And then all you do is you take that cultivation space, figure out what kind of production it would create based on those per square footage production rates, multiply it by the cannabis prices, and then you have an industry essentially that's potentially worth between $2.8 to $6.1 billion. This is what I mean. I'm talking about an industry. I'm talking about a thing, a collection of businesses that produce things to be sent elsewhere to be consumed. And the reason it's only really at least those figures, because the model I use doesn't account for downstream price markups from distribution manufacturing. And here's something I really want to highlight on. I'm trying to do this to kind of articulate what we've been talking about earlier with the permit fees versus sales taxes. So the first part of this is you impose a permit fee that makes you break even. And you can do that. That's legally permitted. And the second indented bullet is just kind of typical language you use to do that. And what happens is when people show up for a permit fee or show up for a permit, their cost is 1%, a percentage of what it takes the total cost for the city to implement the regulations associated with this program. What's interesting about this, to the extent that there's agencies here, whether it's code enforcement or police department, who's ever going to be responsible for this program, are going to have to hire new people and bring people on, and that doesn't come out of revenue. That's just going to come out of permit fees. And then the analogy I like to use is in the big green box at the bottom, is what's happening here essentially from a practical matter, is the regulated industry is going to pay the city for the pleasure of being here. And it wants the city to shut down black market businesses because black market businesses compete with regulated businesses and they're able to compete better on cost because they don't have to comply with all these things. So essentially what happens here is you have a symbiotic relationship between the city and the industry as it results of regulating the industry. And as you kind of may have realized from the previous city attorney's presentation, I believe at the last LRC meeting, if you guys have money, you can shut down all these businesses that are unlawfully operating here. It can be done. It's just not cheap or free. And in this particular scenario, you are getting the industry to pay for it. So that's kind of where I am. And now I'm going to talk about current sources of revenue, and I'll get into a medical cannabis business tax. We have three relevant current sources of revenue for this industry. Real property tax, business registrations fees, utility users tax. You'll notice on this list there's no retail sales tax. I'm not talking about dispensaries here. There's no retail transactions. And as I mentioned before, retail sales tax doesn't get me excited from a revenue generation perspective because it's just another way to tax your residents, especially if you have dispensaries, and the majority of the purchases in the dispensaries are from your residents, then you found a new way to tax your residents. And, you know, what good is that really in my perspective? Okay, so real property tax. I have the assessor data. I can see how much some of these parcels are worth. So according to the assessor, I just made an assumption using the vacant land. We have an assessed value of $66.9 million. I just used Adelanto as an example. Every city will be different. Depends on how you kind of regulate this and set up the cult, you know, the zones where it's allowed. But they had a 1,400% to 2,300% increase in their property values from what they did. Maybe you don't get that. I bet you get some. But if you got what they got, we're talking about $9.7 to $15.4 million based on this industry that I've pitched here, essentially. This model, the model industry. Business registration fees, it's a 0.25% of gross receipts. That equates to 0.8 million to 1.6 million. That's not really too exciting. Here's the real big one. And say what you want about the utility usage of indoor cannabis cultivation, but if the city has a 14% industrial vacancy rate, that essentially the city is saying, I want more utility use and I want more industry here. Well, this is an industry that uses a lot of power, and you guys happen to tax that, so that's a good thing for you. So according to some studies I've read, I have a consultant I like to work with, we're talking about $71.5 million to $786 million in utility costs. And your 7.75% of that equals $5.5 million to $61 million of this model industry that I have in the presentation here. And then the real big thing is the medical cannabis business tax. That's the thing, that the special tax you're going to have to pass by an initiative. I think you get something like this in place, it's not going to be any problem. I think the city's going to be really excited about the revenue that could be generated from a tax like this, and it's almost certain to pass. So here's just what's out there. I just do a gross receipts tax. So I'll run slide 21 just so I can get this done within the allotted time I've been given. But you're just taking gross receipts of the size of the industry. So we're talking $170 million to $363 million at 6%, $283, $605 million at 10%. Okay, so here's like a slide I want you guys to all leave in your head. Just like the one with the diagram, I mean, those are big numbers. Like I said, maybe my assumptions are accurate, but just ratchet them down by whatever. I mean, take them down by two-thirds. Take them down by 90%. I mean, the numbers are so big on this particular model that even something smaller would be just as significant for the city. We're talking about the 300% increase in budget. And these are your guys' numbers. I just added the numbers I came up here, took the average through all the slides and add them to budget, just like you have a good visualization of what it looks like. I'm going to do employment on slide 23. So Colorado is kind of figuring this out. You know, they've been hiring people at cultivation sites, manufacturing sites. So there's people that know how many people it takes to staff up a cultivation site. So if you take everything I proposed, the 650 cultivation sites, 97 manufacturing sites, etc., you get about 20,000 jobs. And you know, say what you want about unions, if you like them, don't like them. But MRSA requires all the jobs to be unionized, or allows it. Okay, well, that's my 15 minutes, and unless there's any available, I have three more slides.
If you would please, yeah, let's wrap it up.
Okay, I'm not going to spend any substantial time on this. This is just a way to think about it. This just essentially reflects a consulting style to the legislative process, and just to highlight, the initiatives don't go through the legislative process. They're not going through the electeds that the voters of the city of San Bernardino put through. And this is kind of the thought process the electeds could go through. Here are the five key questions you'll need to answer to create a permit program. You answer these five questions, give the information to Mr. Graham and Mr. Scott, and I promise you they'll produce you a great ordinance because they're really up to speed on this stuff. And then here's the conclusion. I mean, this is all well and good, but if you want to do it, you better act quick. The first and foremost piece to it is this industry can only be as big as you allow it. I pitched 75% of the city's vacant industrial land. If you only let it to be 25% of the city's vacant industrial land, you can't hit my model. You got to, you know, whatever you let it is what it happened. The other part, as you've already highlighted, Chairperson, you're staring down the barrel of an initiative. Not only does the initiative not go through the legislative process, it's very possible that those initiatives will strip away your power to act in the future, as has happened in Los Angeles. Another thing to keep in mind is you're competing with other cities for this industry, whether you know it or like it or not. Dispensaries will be ubiquitous because there's patients everywhere that are sick, but the industrial components of this industry will not be in every city, and it will be, I think, in my mind, very few cities because the investment associated with it is so intensive. And it's a big, large industrial activity. And that's all I have. I appreciate the extra time to get.
Thank you, Mr. Martin. I want to turn it over to Mr. Nickel if you have any questions regarding the presentation or any points of consideration that you'd like to clarify. Or, sir?
I don't have anything. I think this is very, very well done. Thank you.
I think you did your homework.
And I will spend some time poring over these. I may have some questions. Just follow up on this and some of the assumptions.
Yeah, if we want to kind of play with those a little bit, we can certainly do it and try out different things and see what the revenue figures look like under different scenarios.
I appreciate it.
Thank you, Councilmember.
Regarding your slide on page 22, this is kind of the money slide that you had referenced.
Yep.
And this is more of a question for our city manager as well. As Mr. Graham, what is absent here is the potential under the local control authority rule that the city of San Bernardino has to excise perhaps even a venue tax, an exhibitor's tax, a host tax regarding cannabis conventions at, say, for instance, a fairground or a open house or some type of convention that is convening within our city limits. I think that we should pursue those efforts within certainly the auspices here provided and that we explore those opportunities. If, in fact, the National Orange Show or other fairgrounds or entities have those types of conventions and conferences here relating to the industry, I think we have the powers to certainly excise the tax within those powers. Mr. Graham, do you have any opinion or direction or comments regarding that?
None. I would say that one of the nice parts about the presentation is that it did highlight how the city's existing taxes would rise. You wouldn't necessarily need to pass a new tax for those additional revenue. As for additional taxes, we can certainly look into it. There's always a concern when we're dealing with the Orange Show in particular because of its sort of unique status under state law. That'd be something I'd be happy to research further and come back to the LRC on.
Well, I appreciate the argument. It's been a legacy discussion point here in the city. I'd like for staff to really look into that and explore those opportunities, irrespective of what we have heard chronically that the Orange Show is off limits. I feel that under the local control rule, we certainly have the authority to, and the charter affords this council and mayor to look for a convention or it's very similar, would be to almost a TOT tax, so that an exhibitor or a convention that is hosted here, there would be a ticket sale tax and a visitor's fee tax and an exhibition exhibitor's type of host fee. I think we could either possibly either tuck it into a franchise fee agreement or just an outright ticket sales tax at these types of conventions. So I want to encourage, please, staff, and I think we have a recording secretary, Ms. Weeks, making sure that we actually send that on for exploration. I think those are another means in which we can potentially capture revenue, and it's just a lost stream that we haven't plugged. Mr. Nickel?
I did have a couple questions in regard to, and I'd be happy to let staff or anybody respond, and if we need some time to get back. My understanding of, especially when you're talking about cultivation and industrial scale type of operations, it requires an enormous amount of water, it requires an enormous amount of electricity, and one of the constraints, my understanding, one of the constraints that Atalanta has confronted is the fact that they just don't have the capacity in their grid to accommodate the scope of growth that they were initially anticipating. Do we know what what the capacity is based on our existing infrastructure in terms of whether or not we could even handle an industry of this scope and size?
I don't know as to the electrical side of it, but I do know that the water department has a study in place, you know, concerning future supply issues in the city. I don't believe that study contemplates the creation of a large new cultivation industry in the city. So I would suggest that they be asked to weigh in on, you know, could the city support an industry of the size that is being proposed.
Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Nickel, you bring up a very good point regarding infrastructure and the future of our city. Certainly, if Ms. Weeks could take notes regarding perhaps even involving Mark Persico and community development regarding those very points that Mr. Nickel had brought up regarding electrical and even water utilities serving the industry here. As a tangential piece here, I do have a question regarding utility users tax. Are you suggesting, Mr. Martin, that there might be a additional fee imposed upon not residents, but is there an industrial users utility user tax that we can put forward? And if so, give me kind of the executive summary on how to do that.
Are we talking the one that already exists or one over and above the one that already exists?
Well, there's already a utility user's tax here assessed to residents
on
cable and electric and phone lines. But what is your proposition regarding this in respect to the industry in the industrial zones?
Well, my understanding was that that tax applied to businesses and applies to the electricity used by those businesses. If that's not the case, then obviously this is a really great source of revenue that kind of goes off the table. But my understanding was that 7.75% applies to electricity that that businesses use. That being the case, there's no new action that needs to be taken.
Oh, so you're suggesting because of the high consumption and energy use of these folks, the industry, that the utility, there would be no, it'd be a fixed rate of 7.75 that would not be touched, but because they use more energy or have the potential, that there would be additional revenues.
Yeah, and again, you know, if I misinterpreted how that tax works, I certainly apologize, but I understood it to be that your electricity is taxed at the local level here in San Bernardino at 7.75%. And just as you mentioned, because this industry is so power intensive that you just happen to generate a lot of revenue from a very power intensive industry based on your current practices for your utility users tax.
Sure, certainly. And utility users tax, I see a member of our city clerk's office, but I would almost imagine that our utility users tax, and I'm trying to remember the balance or the budget. There's usually a pie chart in our budget workbooks regarding the income or the revenue from just normal wear and tear on electrical rates.
Here's where it is now. It's at $23 million.
Yeah, I was going to say it's over $20 million.
Yeah.
So you have it there, $23
yeah.
million.
Yeah, we potentially go to $57 million as a result.
Very good. All right. If there are no more questions, thank you, Mr. Martin.
Thank you, Gus.
Mr. Davis.
I have a couple questions.
Sir.
Are you still going to be here?
Absolutely.
Okay. I could wait until after Mr. Madrid.
Sure.
I'll pose the questions.
Certainly. And for the public's edification, Mr. Martin, would you please provide your email address if a member of the public would like to make contact with you, initiate an offline discussion with you?
Oh, sorry.
Okay, very good. Cheryl, thank you. Oh. It's on the front of your...
I'm almost there. There we go.
There you go. All right. Thank you, sir. Thank you for your presentation. All right. Calling forward Mr. Madrid and Amir, thank you, gentlemen, for coming. We certainly appreciate, again, Mr. Madrid has been with us before, and we certainly appreciate his knowledge and expertise regarding the state as a whole, and certainly... We welcome you, sir, and thank you very much for your attendance here and participation.
Sure. Thank you for having me. It's an honor and a privilege to be here speaking before the city. I should probably make it clear what I am and what I am not. I am not a medical cannabis expert or an expert on marijuana policy per se. I am, however, an expert on advising cities and local governments on grappling with very large public policy issues, and that is my interest here today. I do not represent, I'm going to make this very clear, and I spoke with Councilmember Charette after the last council meeting, I do not represent marijuana interests or cannabis interests, and that is by design. I represent public agencies, and I work with public agencies and public agency departments so that we can develop the best public policies that meet the criteria for their communities. So having said that, I do have to say I'm incredibly impressed by the presentation that we just saw. Very comprehensive, and they are precisely the issues that I think that your community needs to be looking at and considering as it goes forward in developing an ordinance, and more than an ordinance, a true vision for what your city can or cannot be. Let me qualify that with a couple of statements. The first is the city of San Bernardino finds itself in a somewhat awkward position facing a voter-driven initiative to essentially place policy, I don't want to say around the policymakers, but around the policymakers without specific input from a legislative body like this committee or the city council generally. We have found in working with over 100 municipalities on probably 100 different issues, that is probably the least optimal way to develop a public policy. And I would suggest that, especially in this policy area, it is even less likely to be successful. It doesn't mean that this ordinance may not work. It does not mean that this ordinance may not be supported by the council or this committee. But what it does mean is, to the greatest extent possible, you can and should be chewing on these issues as you are in this process, with the understanding that at this point, not making a decision is essentially making a decision. Okay? And there are a number of considerations that you do need to take into account. I had the good fortune of serving on the National Board of the American Association of Political Consultants. That's where I was at before I drove over here from Los Angeles. No less than 20 consultants that I spoke with are pushing measures, voter-backed initiatives for the November ballot in California cities this cycle. It is not going away. It is something that has been happening largely when representatives from the industry or a dispensary or somebody who wants to get into cultivation gets frustrated with the city for its perceived inaction, decides it's going to hire a lawyer, draft a ballot measure, throw some money at getting the signatures, put it on the ballot, and take their chances with the voters. I will suggest to you most of those are not successful in terms of passage. However, some are, and again, more often than not, they are not workable or not necessarily workable with the city because there is not the sufficient buy-in from either the elected officials, the elected bodies, the community stakeholders, or the professional staff. The one issue where I would take a little bit of issue with the presentation is on the approach to drafting ordinances, this section here. Again, this is where my area of expertise is. There's nothing in here that suggests that you pursue anything that is quantifiable or qualitative research. That is absolutely critical, and as somebody who has passed more local ballot measures pertaining to either TOTs, UUTs, sales tax measures, land use policies, product bans, you name it, housing developments, it's absolutely critical that you have qualitative research to define where your community is at. And I'm going to give you three specific examples in three different cities that essentially meet the basic demographic profile of a city like this. City of Sacramento, where this process works very well, one of the early adopters was compelled to take action when dispensaries in their community pushed the issue, forced the issue. The city and law enforcement came together, sat at the table, crafted a measure that worked, and to me serves as one of the great examples of cities where this actually works. Another example, the city of Santa Ana, who hired us about a year and a half ago in response to a citizen-driven initiative that was completely unworkable by the city. We had a very narrow time frame to go out and develop a policy that would work for the city. We did that in very short order. We're successful. We passed and outpolled the previous the citizen-driven initiative, so the city was able to develop something that worked as best as it could, given the time constraints, for the city's needs, for the department's needs, and for the resources that they had. Finally, Riverside, a city very close to you. We were involved in researching a measure, citizen-driven measure. Again, somebody decided that they were tired of dealing with a city council that didn't want to place a dispensary measure on the ballot. They decided to take it into their own hands. We polled and realized very quickly the community of Riverside did not want dispensaries in their community. And we knew that the measure would lose and lose on its own weight. And so the city just stepped aside and allowed the measure to lose, and that's exactly what happened. Each community is different and distinct. And while you do need to do very aggressive community outreach, you have to understand that this is a very sophisticated process of assessing what exactly it is that you want. And you, as policymakers, have that responsibility with staff whose jobs it is to wake up and advocate for you and for your interests. I would strongly recommend that you have experts in the industry with you guiding that process, or at least participating in the process, certainly not solely in charge of it. It should be your vision. In the same way that you do not have developers developing your general plan for obvious reasons, and the same reason you don't have auto developers developing your sales tax policy, you need to have advocates, guidance, who are objective or who serve the interests of your city, and that obviously is your staff. But when you are dealing with something as monumental and transformative as a measure like this, with the limited time frame that you have, I think you have a lot of good resources, frankly, in this room to help guide you through that process.
Mr. Madrid,
yeah.
I think you bring up good points. One of the concerns that we have entertained here at the council level is in the month of April, the Legislative Review Committee had suggested and moved forward the item to the full Mayor and Common Council, the need for a poll to better understand our community's needs. Unfortunately, the issue did not surface and resolve result into the action being taken. I was certainly surprised as to why we would not actually want the community polled. This was simply an objective polling tool that we could gauge our community to see the likelihood of and really a bellwether understanding of their needs for quality of life, et cetera. What say you regarding the need for polling, and kind of talk to us regarding polling services and the need for it, or what say you on that matter?
I think you'd be making an egregious policy mistake if you did not poll your residents to find out what they wanted. And I say that as somebody who is not a pollster, who makes no money off of polling, but has worked successfully with a whole army of pollsters that deal specifically in local governments and even in this issue area. Okay? Now, there is a considerable expense that is required. Poll can cost anywhere from $20,000 to $40,000. If you want to get even bigger and deeper on that. But when you look again at some of the pro forma numbers on what is ultimately going to transform, I mean, it's not even pennies. It's a fraction of pennies of what ultimately can be developed with qualitative buy-in from your community. And you need to know that. It's why I brought up those three specific examples. There are some cities where this does not work, and frankly, the community does not want it in any way, shape, or form. Okay? You will hear activists say that, whatever they're going to say, it's quantifiable. There are cities that are absolutely going to demand this, okay, and very progressive, very expansive policies that policymakers sometimes are frankly afraid to move forward with. My guess is if you're like most cities, and I think you probably fall in that middle range, your community is looking for something not terribly unlike what you have probably are seeing with the citizen-driven initiative. But you owe it to yourself. You owe it to your communities. You owe it to the people and the residents of San Bernardino to find out, as the starting point for drafting an initiative, and more importantly, for determining what the vision is for an approach to a medical marijuana or cannabis framework. All of this is absolutely correct, but the starting point begins with your residents. It doesn't even begin with your vision of what it is or can be or should be. The politics is the art of the possible, and you need to determine what that is before you start filling in the framework. Because otherwise, you could spend years going down a path that your citizens may ultimately not want. It's that simple. And there are obviously very complicated considerations. Other cities are moving forward. Other cities are being forced forward by citizen initiative. There will be changes in the statewide framework. There are going to be dozens of bills working their way through the legislative process.
Mr. Madrid, you spoke regarding polling services and the need for it. There are some on our council that have suggested, well, we should probably just wait till November. So walk us through the challenge of waiting any longer on polling the community. This is certainly not an acceptance of marijuana, but it's more attempting to find the pulse point of our community. So the very fact that the city would initiate a poll and approve of a poll doesn't suggest that there is some type of acceptance of it, merely an attempt to understand the community.
In fact, it could be quite the opposite. You could find out your community does not want any of this in your community. And as I mentioned, I bring up Riverside for a very specific example. The polling was quantitatively, qualifiably clear. There were the residents of the city of Riverside did not want cultivation, they did not want manufacturing, they did not want retail dispensaries. They did not want it. And the measure lost by a wide margin as a result. And the city prudently did not act in response to that because they had quantitative data that showed that that's not where the community was at. And that, I think you owe that to yourself, to your residents and to your community to find out. My experience is having done more measures than anybody else on behalf of cities, sure, by the way, not on behalf of industry, okay? I work for cities. Would suggest to me that Riverside is an extreme example, as is the city of Oakland or Berkeley. I don't think you're either of those. My guess is there is a framework that your residents want, and you need to determine what that is. If, as was portrayed earlier, the vision, I think there's a lot of reasons why this makes a whole lot of, what Damian proposed makes a whole lot of sense. Your geography, your history, the resources you have with warehouse space, the whole reason why San Bernardino became a city in the first place makes this a natural for the type of vision he is talking about. And my guess is you will find a lot of sentiment in that direction. But until you can quantify that, I think you are probably either putting that cart before the proverbial horse, or, unfortunately, you may be sticking your head in the sand by saying, we don't want to make a decision until November. But as I just said, you have an issue before you. You have an issue that is going to qualify. Not making a decision is now making a decision. So I think it's time that you guys establish some leadership. And that's not a pejorative way of saying.
Sure.
The issue is before you now. It is before you, regardless of whether or not you want to deal with it.
Mr. Nichol, do you have any observations, questions, comments? And this is just a break, so Mr. Madrid, please, after Mr. Nichol, continue with your presentation. But let's take a short break. Are there any questions, comments regarding Mr. Madrid's presentation?
I just think it's become abundantly clear to me that we do need to conduct a poll, and we need to do it soon. And so my request to our city manager is that perhaps we need to re-agendize this, reconsider it. Hopefully, given the information that I just received an email from our city clerk that yet another initiative is in the works. We just received a letter today of intent to circulate. We cannot simply put our head in the sands. This is something that, as you say, is in front of us. And I think we have an obligation as policymakers, as uncomfortable as it may be at times for us to take action, we need to. And I think it's essential that we understand, as you call it, the pulse of this community in terms of where we're at, what do the residents of this city want, and how do we as policymakers correspondingly engage in a policy process to ensure that that will is realized. But we simply cannot wait. I was very disappointed that was the position that was taken by some of my colleagues. I would implore that we reconsider and conduct the poll as soon as is reasonable and as soon as is possible and move forward on this.
I don't mean to interrupt Mr. Madrid, who
Please.
Hasn't finished yet, but just on that subject, I think the LRC can place the item back on the agenda. And as you know, we never got around to the formal discussion of the issues last time. So I don't personally know where anybody stands on that, but I did want to pass on one caveat from the firm that we had the proposal from. and that was that it's very important, they stressed to me, that we identify what it is exactly we're polling, and that they talked about the sophistication involved in coming up with the actual question that is asked people through the poll. And they told me their typical approach is to actually survey the ballot language that is being considered. See, that may not be what we're doing in this case. And so I think if the city council is interested in moving forward on this, the next question then is going to be working with the pollster, the polling company, to come up with precisely what it is that we're asking the question about. And that's obviously something we can do, but it's not just a matter of saying go do a poll. We're going to need to define exactly what it is we're polling.
Mr. Nickel?
And if I could, then perhaps from Mr. Madrid, in terms of the practice that has occurred elsewhere, I apologize. In terms of the practice that has occurred elsewhere, I would assume there may be some best practices in terms of what kinds of questions have been
sure. And
approached.
And your city manager brings up a good point. You have the benefit of having a measure that is likely to be on the ballot measure. That's exactly where you should start.
Okay.
And I believe your city attorney's office has developed a title and summary, or at least is working on that. That's exactly where you should start. That will give you that baseline framework, and from there you can test, and again you'll need to work with the pollster on this, what tax rates, you can test the cultivation issues, you can test the number of dispensaries, where they're located, you can test elements of the ordinance that you're considering, but the fact that you do have an ordinance that you're already dealing with is the perfect baseline to start that discussion for polling research.
All right, thank you.
Mr. Madrid, please continue with your presentation.
That's really all I have. I'm going to turn it over to Amir to talk a little bit about some of the pro forma stuff that was being discussed, but I'll be around for questions as well.
Good afternoon, members of the LRC, Mayor Davis, City Manager. So I just wanted to talk a little bit, wonderful presentation by Damian, very insightful. At the last presentation I gave at the LRC, you kind of saw the breadth of the industry and the opportunity that is before you. To echo Mr. Madrid, I think it's absolutely essential that you guys get in front of the issue, especially now in light of two possible initiatives at your doorstep. In terms of the cart before the horse, I think the city really needs to take a stand. And just to reiterate what's been echoed and said already, in developing your own tax measure and your own regulation and putting the brakes on everything that's happening, at least getting your foot in front of the getting ahead of the curve here, that the city dictates what happens in the city. Not to say that the constitutional right of voters to put an initiative before you, but when it's an outside group, It's not something that is in the best interest of the city. So in concert with a poll, in concert with what the community wants and needs, it's very important to develop some type of tax measure to get in front of this industry. And then as the city sees fit, to take their time and do the regulations, the zonings, et cetera. So just want to echo that. We are going to provide a couple of model ordinances or tax measures for you. We do have some pro forma numbers that we'll share with you as well. And if there's any questions, please feel free to ask. Thank you.
Mr. Madrid, does that conclude your presentation? Thank you, sir. Mr. Davis, sir, if you have your questions, we have certainly Mr. Madrid, Mr. Martin available. We certainly...
maybe I'll stand over there. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
I have a number of questions. I'm not sure who might be best to answer them, but Councilman Nickel brought up one of the questions, and maybe this is for Mr. Martin. What approximately would be the water consumption based on the model that you put forward?
Thank you for the question, Mayor. Just to be completely transparent, I don't have the cost numbers worked out. It's something we could end up doing with working with folks that are involved in the industry and saying, let's take this hypothetical cultivation site and tell me what it uses. I can tell you directionally, just from my personal experience working with a number of folks in the industry, that for indoor cultivation, in terms of use of resources, water is actually much lower on kind of the needs hierarchy. It's really the power and the electricity that really kind of drives it. Because just so you're aware, most of the indoor cannabis is cultivated hydroponically. So what is happening with that, essentially the water is being recycled continuously. So you're kind of using the same water again and again and again, whereas where with outdoor cultivation, you have a lot of runoff, dissipation, kind of, you know, giving it back to the earth. That doesn't really happen in a controlled indoor environment. But I don't have any specific numbers, but it's something that could easily be developed.
And I think that would be helpful. I think that was one of the questions, especially as we're in a drought condition. Water consumption would certainly, I think, be one of those items that we'd want to know as far as how it would impact.
Absolutely.
The other one, and I think this might be directed to you also, is what would be the CO2 emissions as a result of your model? So I don't know if you have that information.
I don't offhand. It's kind of in this, it would almost be one study, and it's something I could easily commission with some of the folks I work with. I work with a really good energy consultant. That's where I came up. That's how I got the electricity usage numbers. So we could... I could end up work with him, and then we could, like I said, take this hypothetical, which is this 22,000 square foot cultivation site, and my model had 650 of them, and then we just say, okay, so what is each of these hypothetical cultivation sites? It's not within my realm, so in order to get that, I'd have to bring somebody on board, but if we're going to continue down this path, I'd love to do it.
Well, I think as Mr. Midridge was talking about, we need as much information as possible. That's some of the information I think that the community is probably going to want to know.
Absolutely.
How many pounds do you see being produced based on your model?
Oh,
you may not be able.
That I do have because I had to use that. I don't have the number offhand, but essentially, we know that we have 14.3 million dollars a square foot, million square feet of cultivation space, and as I point out, you get 20 grams of cannabis per square footage of cultivation space. Three times a year. So that's actually in the presentation. I could reverse engineer it right now to just do a little tweaks on some Excel spreadsheets, but that's actually in the data. It just wasn't kind of...
I didn't see the number of pounds.
Yeah, so actually, you would take that $2.1 billion revenue figure and divide that by $1,500, and that actually reverse engineers the poundage.
Okay. Or using the other one, the higher number.
Yeah, you take that number and you divide it by 3,000 because that's how I got the size of the industry is I multiplied the poundage that 650 indoor cultivation sites would produce and then multiplied that number by the wholesale cannabis prices.
So you have that, you just don't have it.
It just has to be, like I said, you could tease out there or I could elucidate it by pulling out my Excel spreadsheet that produced the slide, essentially.
I don't know if this is for you or for Mr. Madrid, but the last LRC, I believe, that the deputy city attorney reported indicated that in Colorado there was a significant increase in traffic accidents related to legalization of marijuana in Colorado.
Yep.
Have you extrapolated what that might be, given the potential of additional usage as a result of having the... industry here in San Bernardino?
Well, for my particular model, I haven't at all because my model is not a consumption model. The way I pitch it is this is about providing an industry, and whether or not you have dispensaries along with that industry is ultimately up to the policymakers. So in my model, you actually have less consumption in the city of San Bernardino because the industry comes in, pays permit fees. Those permit fees are then used to shut down the unlawful dispensaries, so then you have less consumption. Now, if you were to allow some lawful dispensaries, that depends on how that works out. We're still in the talking medical as well, so assuming that all the medical cannabis patients in the city of San Bernardino are already being satisfied by the 30 or so unlawful dispensaries, and you have five new lawful dispensaries, there's no net change in consumption. Where the net change in consumption would occur is if you have recreational come on board, in which case you would have more people consuming cannabis than were beforehand. And as I kind of elucidated in my presentation, recreational is a problem that you're going to have to kind of revisit prior to January 1st, 2018. Right now we're just talking medical. So in my model, there's no additional consumption in the city of San Bernardino. So there's no need. It's essentially... whatever kind of drug driving you have within the city now, you would continue to have the same amount afterward, in this particular scenario.
In the city of Ontario, they recently passed an ordinance. The ordinance was passed on, I believe, May 3rd, 2016. The Ontario City Council adopted an ordinance regulating the sale of butane. Mm-hmm. The reason was to address safety concerns surrounding the use of butane as a solvent in the manufacture of butane hash oil or honey oil from marijuana. The manufacture of honey oil is illegal in California, and the use of volatile inflammable chemicals such as butane in this manufacturing process creates a fire and explosion hazard.
Sure.
What would be your expectation of additional potential explosions as a result of the manufacture in the city of San Bernardino?
So there's two kinds of manufacturing, Mayor. The first is called volatile. So and that's going to be something that's licensed under state law. So the suggestion by the city of Ontario that the manufacturing of cannabis with volatile solvents is not exactly accurate. At some point, that will be licensed by the state. And if so, the city wanted to, they could license that. Now, when I work with cities, I actually steer them away for that because there's another option. The state law defines two different types of manufacturing. One's called volatile, and that's the use of the conversion of raw cannabis into cannabis products using flammable solvents. And then the other option is called non-volatile, and that's the conversion of raw unfinished cannabis into cannabis products through the use of things that don't explode, such as pressure, heat, you could use butters, et cetera, and then CO2. This is what I do when I go to the city. I go, look, it's probably not politically sustainable to create a permit for volatile manufacturing. So that being the case, that becomes a prohibited activity in the city. So notwithstanding the fact that the state will license that type of manufacturing activity at some point in the future, the city could say, we're not signing up for that. And actually, that's kind of, I encourage that. It's the same thing as dispensaries. There's different political quantum with dispensaries and volatile manufacturing, and I kind of like to stay out of the hornet's nest, so to speak, with that stuff. So when we talk about the 97 cultivation sites, it could be 97 cultivation sites that are not allowed to use any kind of flammable solvent to conduct the conversion process.
Recent article in the Colorado newspaper regarding Colorado Springs. Mm-hmm. Headline is "Day of Reckoning Coming for City's Illegal Marijuana Growers." And as you know, they've have both recreational marijuana. Drug raids targeting illegal marijuana grow operations shipping to out-of-state markets have made headlines in Colorado, but Colorado Springs has seemed untouched. "Judgment Day is coming," said Colorado Springs Mayor John Southers. He expects hundreds of busts in coming months. And those busts won't focus on your average home grows, where citizens cultivate a few more plants than the 12 legally permitted. They are targeting unregistered, commercial-sized operations run by out-of-state residents, mm-hmm. mainly from Florida and with ties to cartels. Florida's proximity to Cuba has increasingly made it an entry point for drug cartels looking to penetrate markets in the U.S., officials say. If you look at who is being busted in Pueblo and who will be busted in Colorado Springs over the summer, you can tell these are organized crime, Southers said. A lot of them are Cubans coming up from Central America, and they're buying or leasing homes, making huge amounts of money trashing the homes. There's no question in Colorado Springs we have a large illegal grow operation in several hundred homes. Two Denver drug enforcement agents were even more specific in an April 11th presentation to the City Council, saying that they identified at least 186 large-scale marijuana grows operating in Colorado Springs and trafficking products to the Midwest and East Coast. Some of the drugs are getting into Mexico, the agent said. So the question I think that surrounds this is the state of Colorado has legalized it, mm-hmm. yet the illegal continues to flourish. And so that would, I think, be one of the questions that does lead into the explosions, because if that's a less expensive, and I don't know if it's less expensive, mm-hmm. you butane to extract the honey oil, and I don't know if that's necessarily what they're built, generating through the illegal grows.
Sure.
How would you see that the legislation would be dampening that potential impact?
Well, what I would suggest is that kind of the state of the world where we have the illegal grows and the illegal dispensaries, that represents the state of the world that San Bernardino currently exists in. To the extent that there continues to be illegal and unpermitted activity, which I would concede that there probably would be, after the city of San Bernardino were to create a permit program like the one I've suggested here, at least your enforcement resources would increase substantially in order to go after those illegal grows. So that's kind of would be...
Doesn't seem to have worked for Colorado, though.
Well, the other part of it is Colorado also has the bifurcated parallel model that California uses. So I'd have to see what's going on in Colorado Springs. Does Colorado Springs have a permit program, or are they like San Bernardino is now, where Colorado Springs just bans everything, which encourages a black market? People come in. It's hard to have you don't have the enforcement resources to go after all these. So I look at Colorado Springs. If Colorado Springs has a ban, because that's, you know, you have to give due respect to the local governments whenever you create a state-level regime for something like this, and even the states where they have legal recreational, legal medical, such as Washington, Colorado, Oregon, they always give the local governments the ability to ban it. So it's very, I don't have the article in front of me, I haven't read it, I'm not an expert on, when I say medical cannabis policy expert, I should say California medical cannabis policy expert. But if Colorado Springs has a ban, then that would be kind of the eureka moment. It's this is easier to control when you have somebody paying you to control it for them. And that's kind of my vision with it. With the regulated industry says, I'll give you as much permit fee as you want as long as you are going to be committed and be successful in getting rid of my competition. And that's kind of like my model with, the symbiotic relationship between the regulated industry and the city that are both against the black market, because both don't want the black market to exist.
And it seems that, I think Mr. Mindred talked about Santa Ana. I think a recent article indicated that even with the legalization of it, the black market is almost pushing out, in some cases, the legal market's there. So there's still a problem with the illegalization of marijuana, even though it may be legalized.
Oh, I can see that you're going to continue to have illegal businesses. At some point, we're going to have, in addition to the San Bernardino's resources on this, we're going to have a state-level regulatory agencies, actually lots of them, get involved. So it's just about effort. I mean, there's nothing we can do about that. This is already ongoing. That's our state of the world now, is a huge black market in the city of San Bernardino. What I'm suggesting is, let's at least go after it and provide the ammunition to go after it through the permit fee program, and then eventually the state-level agencies stepping in and getting involved. And can we eliminate it forever and for good? I would love to, but I don't know if it's possible. But I think we'll be in a better state than where we are now. I mean, like I said, you can go around, you can go on Weed Maps. There's 30 brick-and-mortar dispensaries that are completely unlicensed by the city that are kind of open and notoriously operating within the city. I can promise you those brick-and-mortar dispensaries will not operate open and notoriously once they become aware that the city is flush with resources to go after them. They're going to keep driving them underground, and I guess the objective is to keep pushing them underground, making it hard for them to do their job until the point they give up. I mean, that's law enforcement. It's a fight. So I would like the city to have better resources to engage in that fight that's already exists. So we have the fight now, and we're going to have it afterward, but at least we'll have some money to do it and to prosecute the battle.
It's my understanding that it's a cash business, and that banks are reluctant to accept that cash.
That's certainly the case, and it's even greater the case given the state-level regulatory regime for cannabis being this clunky affirmative defense. Given the way the federal law is going, and given legislative activity by the state legislature to try to address this issue, I think in very short order we have state-chartered banks and credit unions that step in and serve the medical cannabis industry in the state. Here's one way I think about this, too. This is happening. This is going to happen no matter what. The city of San Bernardino cannot be involved. The state has said it. The state has spoken already. They're going to create permits. They're going to give licenses. It's going to be a fully licensed and regulated industry just like any other. The same regulator that gives licenses for medical doctors are going to be part of one of the regulators that gives licenses to medical cannabis businesses. So, you know, to that extent, the city of San Bernardino has an option to be a part of it and has the resources and the infrastructure to potentially be a big part of a huge industry that the state has said is going to exist. So it's, and that's why I said I'm here not today because I think cannabis is great. I'm here today because the state law has made it possible. So that's, I think, is the most significant thing about all this. So whether or not, and if the city of San Bernardino decides to continue on the current course of action, the revenues won't come because they're going to go to another city. And the state is going to say, that's fine, San Bernardino, we've given you the right to ban it, but we're going to have this industry. It's happening regardless, and it's probably going to happen on the recreational scale at some point as well. And, you know, that's obviously less altruistic. There's less kind of good feelings associated with that. But it's, you know, the people have spoken at the state level. And I hope that at the city level, the people speak as well and say, well, if we're going to have it, we have a great industrial town here. Why not have it here and take all the benefits that come with it and do it in a way that addresses the public safety issues in a greater, better than what's being done now. And like I said, you know, the way I've presented it is if you don't want consumption in the city of San Bernardino and the residents don't want consumption in the city of San Bernardino, then essentially we don't allow dispensaries and just allow these things that are very consistent with the character of the city.
Thank you, Mr. Martin.
I have one more question.
Yes.
So, given the scenario currently, because banks don't record or don't take in that cash, how is the receipts going to be audited? How do you confirm the amount that's supposed to be taxed?
Oh, so that one way to address that is what's called a track and trace program, where at, how that exists at the state level is going to be the state is going to literally make cannabis cultivators identify. I kind of joke around and say it's, every cannabis plant is going to have a social security number at the end of the day, and that's probably too big and too much to do at the city level to like say we're going to have a regulatory agency in the city that's going to make sure every one of these cannabis plants has a social security number. But what the city can very easily do is just make the businesses do good inventory. And here's the thing about it. Good businesses do good inventory anyway. You don't even have to ask them to do it. They just are like, we want to know exactly what's going on with our business at every point in time. So really what you're going to be doing is, because you're going to have some discretionary authority, I'm assuming, with the regulatory regime you go down, where the city council or some other discretionary body is going to say, I want this business, but I don't want that business in my town. So you're going to get those businesses that want to do good inventory, want to keep track of things. And what you're essentially going to do, and there's different levels of kind of involvement that you could give to the city, but essentially you're just going to make that business push all the inventory data to your regulator. And then with that data, it's going to be very easy to see when somebody's kind of cheating the system. So what I like to use, for example, if you know a facility has 22,000 square feet, you would know that because you license it. Then you would know, based on some of the models I presented, and perhaps even more sophisticated models, how much that facility is supposed to produce. So that facility is constantly pushing you inventory updates. And when you knowing what you know about the facility, and you're, I'm just going to throw out a number hypothetically, you expect that facility to produce 10,000 pounds of cannabis. And when your inventory receipts that your regulator is receiving from this business only adds up to 5,000, then you go, that guy's probably cheating the system somewhat. But you know that because you have all the data. You're making the business admit it to you under penalty of perjury. And like I said, good businesses are keeping good inventory anyhow. And that's what track and trace really is. But for the social security number part, it's just keep good inventory and tell me when stuff moves. And give me the information. I don't want to have to ask you for it. I want you to send it to me. And we can talk about that. I have models for executing track and trace at the local level. If anybody's interested, I mean I'm kind of nerdy about this, so I when I finally figured it out, I was like, yes. But they're there.
Any Thank you.
Questions? Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Mayor.
All right, let's open it up to our public comments. And I see Darren will be our first speaker, followed by Mark Estermeyer, followed by James D. Aguilera. If you would please line up on the wall, I'd appreciate it. That would help us. Mr. Espiritu, you have three speaker splits. If you wouldn't mind condensing them into just, one. These are all okay. same items, same material, and the chair will recognize you for 3 minutes, sir.
Darren Espiritu, lifelong resident, City of San Bernardino. I'm concerned about the agenda online. I got this. Then when I come in here, I get this. It doesn't really give adequate time to prepare remarks on it when we've got about 150 pages here to review, and I got them about 20 minutes before the meeting started. I went to the, I went up to the second floor up there to get the packet on two occasions today. I was told to come back at 1 o'clock, it'd be ready. It wasn't ready then either. This is a lot of information to review, you know, and I'd like to give informed public comments on this, but I'm just getting it right now. It's an awful lot of information to review. I believe that you guys probably had this a lot sooner than right now. So it'd be nice to get a little bit more time on that. I don't know where that falls into the Brown Act, but, you know, all I got was this, and this is all that was posted online. Secondly, Municipal Code 5.05.010, medical marijuana dispensaries prohibited. It shall be unlawful for any person or entity to establish, own, manage, conduct, or operate any medical marijuana dispensary as defined in San Bernardino Municipal Code Section 1906.026, or to participate as an employee, contractor, agent, volunteer, or in any other manner or capacity in any medical marijuana dispensary in the City of San Bernardino. We can't enforce this right now. We haven't been able to. This is a law. It's in place. It's not working. So what are we going to do? We're going to create another ordinance and try to, we're going to basically make this the marijuana capital of California. We're going to, the problem is we can't enforce this now, so we're going to pretty much legalize it to try to enforce it, to get money to enforce it. It doesn't make sense. This is not the right way to do this. Please, we're revitalizing a city here. We're coming out of a bankruptcy, and is this how we're rebranding the city? Really, this is the best that we can do. I have serious concerns about medical marijuana. Bear with me. I have some talking points. Okay. We are the number one most dangerous city in the country. That's no secret. There is a lot of crime associated with medical marijuana dispensaries. I know they operate illegally here in the city. What additional crime will happen as a result of the cultivation centers? We skimmed through the packet so fast that I didn't hear about, you know, what are the downsides to it? Is there crime associated with cultivation sites? Burglary, theft, robbery? I don't know how that's going to play into it. Do we have the resources currently to deal with those potential crimes that could arise as a result of those? It's a serious concern. I know that six cities in San Diego County, plus Riverside and Yucca Valley, have voted on medical marijuana sales. And they opposed it. I don't think it would be that much different in San Bernardino if it went to a poll of the people here. You'd be surprised. I don't think that it's going to have this overwhelming favorable response to it. I'm almost positive that this will not happen if it went to a vote. I would strongly encourage the LRC and the elected officials to find other opportunities for, you know, economic gain in our city. And let's not make this the drug city. You know, let's do something else here. Let's find something positive that will attract quality taxpayers to our city and families and make this a safe place. And let's lose that reputation of crime. And let's turn the city around in a positive way. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Estermeyer, welcome. Yes, please.
Thank you very much. Appreciate you taking on this topic this time around. Damien, that was an awesome job. Mr. Madrid, awesome. It was great. First of all, my name is Mark Estermeyer. I'm a 4th-generation San Bernardino City resident. My family has lived here for over 100 years. My family also has been conducting business in the city of San Bernardino for 40-plus years. I was in the mortgage industry. I was an electrician prior to that, and a number of years ago, I left the mortgage industry and made the decision to start helping medical marijuana businesses try to stay as compliant with this hodgepodge of rules and guidelines that we have. It's been absolutely ridiculous the way that the state had set it up. And believe me, when they pass this law that actually is going to give us a framework that provides some solid guidance for the cities to work with, it was very exciting news for me and the people that I work with. I have a company right now that works with cultivators and dispensaries. One of the companies that I work with happens to be right here in San Bernardino. They've been operating for quite a while under the radar, doing exactly the way that they're supposed to. With what my company does is that it helps set guidelines, practical purses, best business practices for both the cultivator and the dispensary. Unlike Damien, I actually like the dispensary side because, let's face it, that is actually the face of the medical marijuana industry. Yes, you have all these wonderful plants growing in these warehouses that you don't know exist or anything like that, but your city sees the dispensaries, okay? Whether you choose to have them here or not, that's obviously going to be your choice on with what you want to do with them. But there are plenty of citizens, constituents, and specifically voters in your city that do want this, that they are going to be asking for it. They're going to be wanting to have access. I agree with Damon that it's an awful idea to have another revenue source coming from taxing your citizens. But there are lots of people out there that are actually using the product correctly, that they're using it properly, and with the right people in place at these retail locations that can educate people, not only the new ones, the 70-year-olds, the 80-year-olds who are just coming into a dispensary for the first time trying to find medication to get off of opiates. We also have young people coming into these stores that are looking for guidance, 21, 22-year-olds that have never heard somebody tell them, stop doing it this way. This is the way that you do it. If you want to relieve yourself, this is how you do it. What it comes down to is having something in place that the citizens of the city can get behind. You have a huge, huge task. I know that you guys know it. Damien knows it. Mr. Madrid knows it. The mayor knows it. Maybe the citizens of the city, they have no idea the magnitude of this issue that you have. I don't even believe my peers understand the magnitude of it. It's huge. And you shouldn't take it lightly. This is a big deal. And I know that the city will do the right things. It's going to take some time. And I thank you so much for giving me this opportunity to say hi. Thank you, guys. Keep pressing forward. You're doing great work.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Aguilera? James Aguilera. Sir, welcome.
Good afternoon. Good evening. James D. Aguilera. Let me see if I can be helpful in a few words. The Medical Marijuana Regulation and Safety Act, that's what we now have in place as of January 1. It is regulation at the state level. It is state licensing. It's not state permitting. It's state licensing. We have to, as a state, and you have to, as a city, respect the federal law. You cannot enact regulations which conflict with the federal law, okay? That's called federal law preemption. A state law that conflicts with the federal law is preempted and will be in court, and it'll be thrown out of court, okay? So in order to comply with preemption, you develop a regulatory program, but not a permitting program in the sense that you're authorizing or giving an entitlement, a special privilege. You don't sanction it. You regulate it. Now, as long as you're regulating, you're not conflicting with the federal law. But the minute you step over-regulating into these beauty contests or lotteries where you're actually choosing the winners and the losers, we enter into federal law preemption. That's there. You're going to have to deal with it. Every city's going to have to deal with it. That new state law is specifically designed to avoid that federal law preemption issue by limiting it to regulation, okay? It does then tie it back to city licensing, permitting, or other form of authorization. The state law should never have used that word, other form of authorization. the courts have already ruled. In California, the courts have ruled that the reason that California's medical marijuana laws are not in conflict with federal law is because we never authorized or legalized marijuana, even at the state level. What we did is decriminalize it for purposes of our own criminal statutes. That's all we did. It's been referred to as an affirmative defense. That's just another way of saying it's been decriminalized for purposes of California law. It still remains a felony, a class one narcotic, no different than heroin or cocaine as far as federal law is concerned. A change of administration changes the policies about enforcement, but you will not run afoul of state law as long as you hold it to regulation and not to choosing the winners and the losers, which is the temptation right now for all the cities. You want to choose who's going to get the permit and who's not going to get the permit, right? And there's a lot of reasons for that the cities want to choose who gets the permit and who doesn't. It has to do a lot with politics. I'm a former city planning director, a former city manager. I was your planning officer for the Inland Valley Development Agency. I do understand the politics, but please don't go into that area where we're going to have problems in the court and all the work you do is going to be thrown away. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. William Ciosi. What I encourage is Mr. Ciosi's coming down. If we have any final yellow slips, please submit those to Cheryl. Otherwise, we'll be proceeding onto our calendar. Thank you, Mr. Ciosi. Welcome.
Hello. Thank you again for your time. Mayor, thank you for coming. Thank you, friends and neighbors, residents. I hate to be the one that keeps saying, I told you. But every single thing that's been going on, I've told you, I've warned you, I've tried to give you guidance and direction and alternatives. But it's been this craziness. And I noticed that there is some change that seems to be happening here with this committee, but it's been with the body of our city council, in particular our mayor, just afraid to have honest discussion about this. Just will ignore it, and maybe it'll go away. But it's not going away. And we're coming out of this bankruptcy with no future. I mean, what else can we do? If Disneyland wanted to come here and buy up a couple hundred acres, would we be really worried about the recycled water on the boat ride? Would we be concerned about all the drunks that are going to be on the road on 4th of July because, you know, they have a big thing? Or would we be really thinking about all the jobs, all the opportunity, the things that we could be building on instead of just being this dirt hole in the middle of nowhere? I really ask you to consider the initiative that I've proposed to be a possible counter to having something forced upon us that is no better than having a ban forced upon us. It's been said here that we as a city should have an input, that we should say what we want here, what we don't want here, not forced by politicians, not forced by my millionaire land developers, not forced by out-of-town entities that, from what I hear, they got their money to put this together from this city. That's crazy. It really is. I just ask you guys to think. Use logic. Use compassion. Have some foresight down the road. Don't lose. Don't give. What's that saying, San Bernardino? The city that never loses an opportunity to lose an opportunity, something like that. Please, again, do what's right. Do what needs to be done. Have courage. Lead us. We ask you. We need you. And we thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Ciosi. I want to let's bring this back home here, and I don't see that there's any more slips, so We're going to go ahead and close our public comments regarding this. Sensing the need to move this forward, I'd like to make some recommendations, and if there are no objections from Mr. Nickel, I'd like to go ahead and lead forward the movement onto the Mayor and Common Council. Ms. Weeks, if you would take good notes regarding some of my comments here and the direction that I'd like to head forward. Sensing the immediacy and the urgency to craft a counter ordinance and a counter initiative, I'd like to propose the ordinance as brought forward by Mr. Madrid, that is in yellow document. I'd like to propose that draft and move it on to the Mayor and Common Council. Mr. Madrid, do you have any final comments regarding the canary yellow paper here? Are there any? The business regulation ordinance. It's a draft, a proposed draft.
Yes.
All right. Very good. Mr. Is Amir coming down?
Yes.
Would you like to provide any background on this as we?
Yes. So actually, that's not an updated version.
Okay.
We'll get you an updated version. So basically, that's just kind of a broad authorization to authorize this industry and tax it, but it imposes on the Planning Commission and the City Council to implement it at their discretion.
Okay.
It's essentially getting ahead of the curve, imposing a tax, countering any outside measures that may come in, and giving you the time and resources that you need to develop an industry.
How soon can we get a revised?
I can email it to you right now.
Okay. We'd love for you to do that as soon as possible.
Absolutely.
Ms. Weeks will be happy to provide you that email address. But I'd like to go ahead and move it forward to the Mayor and Common Council. I think the need for us to act and provide some leadership here on this very important topic necessitates the activity. I also want to make sure that there is language here regarding the volatile fuels component that was addressed here. So Mr. Madrid and Amir, if you could provide some caveats here for the volatile fuels. I'm certainly aware of Mr. Davis's concerns. It's also, I appreciate the concerns expressed by Mr. Davis regarding some of those volatile fuels. I'd like some language here that would also make safety provisions for residents and stakeholders on the volatile fuel aspect. Sensing that there are no other points here of consideration, if we could, if there's no objection, I'd like to move that forward to the July 5th meeting of the Mayor and Common Council. So we can start immediately working on this, and I'd like to send this to the voters. We need to take some steps, folks. Otherwise, the initiative put forward by an outside firm and agency will dictate what we here have in our city.
Council member,
yes,
I just wanted to, you know, I obtained a copy of this today.
Sure.
And obviously, I know that there were some issues with it. They're revising it, and I'd like to see that revised. Copy. I did have a concern that I was hoping could be addressed, and that is that our city council elections are on odd years, not on even years. So I'm not sure of the availability of having a tax measure of this type on our November ballot of this year. And that's further complicated, as it should be always, by the fact that our proposed charter changes are changing us from odd years to even years. So we may not have the ability to place a tax measure of this nature on the ballot until 2018. So if this does go to the council, that's something that's going to need to be analyzed and addressed at that time.
Well, and that's exactly why, Mr. Scott, I had suggested that we need to review the initiative presented by the outside firm and do the due diligence on economic impact and fee studies, whether or not this is a sales tax because of the square footage component, or if in fact is a fee. So please, if you would, sir. So that is an action item that Mr. Scott is acknowledging and nodding his head that his department would probably handle. So Ms. Weeks, if you could make note of that, I'd appreciate that. Mr. Nickel?
Yeah, well, I think we've discussed this enough in committee. I think it's time to move something forward to the council and begin a robust discussion in the context of the full council. I tend to agree with you. There may be some aspects of this we'll need to iron out, which is fine. We'll do that in the context of our council discussions and deliberations. So I will go ahead and second that and move this forward.
Sensing no objection on that particular matter, I'd like to recommend and direct a placement on that on the July 5th calendar for the Mayor and Common Council to deliberate. All right, moving on to the matter of polling. I would like to also suggest that we expedite discussion and approval and direct the city attorney, city manager to begin initiate polling services for the community. I think, Mr. Scott, I appreciate the kind of back to us, and there probably should be discussion on what we want polled, but I'm trusting you as the trusted professional here to really kind of have those conversations with the pollsters and the direction that the council. I don't know if we have even the qualified expertise here to provide guidance. I think that you could probably get some general direction, but we trust you. We certainly have hired you and given you the authority to do that. So I'd like, sensing no obligation, Mr. Nickel, and no objection, I'd like to place that on the calendar, re-agendize for the July 5th meeting, polling, community polling, to begin immediate and provide direction to the city manager to begin that work.
Yeah, and I would just like to repeat the recommendation that came from Mr. Madrid, that we really focus on the initiatives that have been, that are moving forward or likely to move forward, that really be the focus of the poll so we can get some sense of what direction this may be going and hopefully give us some guidance on how we may refine this document if necessary. Thank you.
All right, so those two items have been ordered, and I certainly appreciate Mr. Scott's expertise on the fee and economic impact, and those will appear on July 5th, and we appreciate your attendance here. We're going to go ahead and close it out. I do have one public speaker, Mr. Speedy, regarding items not on the agenda. Sir, would you like to address the public and the committee again regarding your item not on the agenda? As he's coming down, I want to release the upcoming calendar dates for the Legislative Review Committee for the next quarter. We do tend to meet monthly, and I will make those public now. Meetings for the Legislative Review Committee for the next quarter will begin at 4 p.m. on the following dates: Tuesday, July 12th, Tuesday, August 9th, and Tuesday, September 13th, all convening here, as published on the agenda. Of course, the needs of the meeting size and meeting room are only dictated by the topic. So look for the location to be announced on the agenda, but July 12th, August 9th, September 13th, meeting at 4 p.m. somewhere here at City Hall for legislative review. Mr. Espiritu, you have 3 minutes, sir, regarding items not on the agenda, sir.
Thank you, Darren Espiritu, resident. I just wanted to address the recent rash in, or spike rather, in property crime in the northeast portion of the city. There's been a number of residential burglaries in the last 48 hours. I want to make sure that the multifamily residential program is being enforced and the other programs that we do have already in place. I have concerns that we have some good legislation that's already there, and I want to make sure that it's being enforced as it's written to ensure that we're getting the results that, you know, we would expect from those. Crime is completely out of control in this city. It's extremely dangerous. My neighbors are very uneasy. Our neighborhoods are not safe. These are neighborhoods that have been phenomenal areas for, you know, hardworking, taxpaying families to live in for decades. I know that after the Air Force Base closed, a number of other massive losses for our city had brought us into this, and, you know, but we have to keep our eyes on what's going on here. There is a incredible issue with crime in our city. Public safety is far and away the biggest issue facing us. It's gone beyond quality of life, and I do want to applaud the work that the Quality of Life team is doing. Phenomenal. the differences are noticeable, but we need more. We need more than that. It's not safe. It's simply not safe here in San Bernardino right now. People are very concerned. People are going to be leaving. They already are. I want to make sure that the focus is on public safety in whatever discussions are coming up. If we're talking about marijuana cultivation, make sure that the public safety element and the effects, you know, the potential impacts on safety are addressed first and foremost, because I believe that's the number one thing on everyone's mind, and it'll be the number one issue in November or whenever it goes to a vote. So just reiterating my concerns about recent surges in residential crime, criminal activity. And up in the 4th Ward and 7th Ward, pretty much all around the whole city. But I'm seeing it more so in the last few days in the Linwood area and up in my part of town. Please make sure that that's the focal point of your discussions, the safety of residents here. I think that that's a basic expectation, that we have the feeling of at least some semblance of safety when we do our business and work in and around the city. So thank you for your consideration on that. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Mr. Espiritu. All right, meeting is adjourned, and you all have a great evening.